Good morning, WMNF Tampa, and welcome back to Midpoint, your mid-Florida, mid-week, mid-morning source for news and public affairs from a local perspective. I'm still your host, Shelley Reback, which is a good sign because it is still the most dangerous time of the year when the Florida legislature is still in session. And this year in particular, they are proving dangerous to all of the citizens of Florida, to public education, to our First Amendment freedoms, to our reproductive rights, to our local home rule, and to our democracy altogether. Some of the more egregious and disturbing bills now being passed or heard in the legislature as we reach the halfway mark in the session include the permitless carry law that allows Floridians to carry guns without concealed weapons training, without background checks, and without licenses. The six-week abortion ban, which is almost certain to pass tomorrow and then be signed by the governor, and a bill that places more restrictions on public employee unions is ready to go to the full House. Lawmakers are also expected to lift the requirement for a unanimous verdict by a jury before the state can put someone to death. And in an annual tradition now, the Republican-controlled legislature has moved forward with a bill making sweeping changes to our election laws, further restricting voter registration groups, relaxing campaign finance rules, and making it harder for first-time voters to cast a ballot. These are dark and dangerous times in our legislature as Florida marches ever closer to an autocracy with a side of fascism. But Representative Webster Barnaby, Republican from Deltona, has found the devil in these details. This week, he likened transgender people to demons, imps, and mutants on the House floor, and no one in leadership took any action to discipline him. There is so much more to critique in the Florida legislature, and there's no relief in sight for the problems that truly plague Floridians, like the lack of affordable housing and the massive homeowners insurance crisis that threatens to increase our housing problems. But today, we are going to be talking about a problem that is only partially the fault of Florida's government. Or maybe mostly Florida's fault, but it is a federal problem that is about to engulf close to a million Floridians. So we need to interrupt our regularly scheduled ranting and raving about the transgressive Florida legislature to talk about it. Today's show is about the unrolling of an estimated 15 million Americans in the United States who were guaranteed Medicaid health care coverage during the pandemic. But let's back up a bit for some context on the great unwinding. In the early days of the pandemic, the United States government did something truly unimaginable. It transformed itself within just weeks into something like a European-style welfare state. It was Bernie land. Congress stepped up and made benefits like Medicaid and food stamps more generous. It created entirely new federal benefits like paid sick leave and caregiving leave and more free school lunches. And it gave out nearly universal pandemic benefits like stimulus checks and child allowances. And all told, the government spent about $5 trillion just helping people and businesses from March 2020 when COVID emerged to now. Since then, most of these federal benefits have been disbanded. Last week marked the end of the higher SNAP benefits, and now families will be receiving much less in food stamps than they had been getting during the pandemic. But one of the longest-lasting benefits, the automatic renewal of Medicaid benefits, has now also come to an end. For the first time in 3 years, Florida, because it's a joint state and federal program, so Florida can now start removing people who don't qualify or who don't properly reapply from receiving their Medicaid health benefits. Millions of Floridians now must reapply for coverage in a very complicated process, and many may lose their coverage altogether. So healthcare advocates are gearing up to help the 5.7 million Floridians currently enrolled in Medicaid to navigate the mandatory renewal process. My guests today are going to help us understand what is happening to Medicaid healthcare and what options are available for those people caught in this problem of being disenrolled from their healthcare coverage. So Jody Ray is here. Jody is the executive director of Florida Covering Kids and Families at the University of South Florida, which is a part of the statewide nonprofit initiative called Covering Florida. Jody's been helping people find health insurance for the last 20 years. I'm happy to have you here, Jody.
Thank you.
And Katie Roters Turner, executive director of Family Healthcare Foundation, is also with us. Katie and her team of healthcare navigators are also committed to helping people enroll in quality healthcare programs in Florida. So welcome to you too, Katie.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before we begin, I want to remind our listeners that we welcome your questions and comments throughout this live show, especially early on when we have time to address them. So you can call us at 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. So let me start with you, Jody. Please explain to us, what just happened with Medicaid, and why are so many Floridians likely to lose their health care coverage?
Well, during the pandemic, we saw a whole lot of folks that previously maybe weren't looking for access to health care at the rates that they needed it during the pandemic. And we realized, particularly in states like Florida and some of the others among the 11 that haven't expanded Medicaid, that we have a whole lot of folks in our state that do not qualify for any coverage options. So they're in the coverage gap. And ultimately, they would have to go to the community health centers or the ERs. And, you know, we saw what was happening and that, overloading all of that. So when the federal government did was said states are changing up the eligibility, people that apply, most people were getting Medicaid. They weren't redetermining them for eligibility, meaning regardless of their eligibility, they were going to retain their Medicaid.
Yeah, it was more like universal coverage, right?
Exactly.
It was universal coverage because people were getting sick. They were clogging up the emergency rooms with no ability for the hospitals to recoup the cost of the health care they were providing through emergency rooms. So here the federal government swoops in and decides, just like Bernie Sanders has consistently advocated, we need some universal health care here, and we're basically going to take everyone who doesn't have their own individual or family private health insurance, or who doesn't qualify on the marketplace, the Obamacare marketplace, and we're going to put you on Medicaid and let you go get health care during the pandemic. Is that pretty much
well,
it?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it also, you have to look at what would have happened with the rates of uncompensated care going into these hospital systems and these medical facilities, in addition to the amount of folks that needed that care and couldn't afford it. And so they were either going to have to forego it, or they were going to show up and have to seek care they really didn't have the income for.
Right.
So we were seeing households whose financial stability was being dismantled simply by the cost of health care.
By medical debt.
So, yeah, so this really made a difference for a lot of families, particularly in a state like Florida where we have not expanded Medicaid.
Yeah.
So this has been incredibly impactful. But now the federal government, under the Consolidated Appropriations Act, separated out the ending of the PHE and said,
What's the PHE?
The public health emergency.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, so they said, you know, now is the time we're not going to keep putting more money into the states to cover all of these folks that might not be eligible for Medicaid, really.
Right.
And so now the states had to come up with a plan to start to do those redeterminations and figure out exactly who is eligible to have Medicaid, and those that are not, where should they be? Should they be in the marketplace? Should those kids be in CHIP?
CHIP is the children's health care.
Yeah, so program. We have the Florida Kid Care program, and that includes for children, Medicaid, Medikids, Florida Healthy Kids, and the Children's Medical Services program. So that's specifically designed with kids' health care in mind. So that's an advantage that we have in the state, but at that point, most of those kids were still being retained in Medicaid. So now we're going to see transfers.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, and Katie, please chime in on this too. Florida has not expanded Medicaid like 10 other states, and that has caused additional problems for all of these disenrollees, people who have been basically bounced off the Medicaid program right now. And in addition, the situation is complicated by the fact that children in Florida, children's health care in Florida is treated separately from adult health care. So people have to apply to get their kids into one of these Florida children's care programs, or they have to be directed there as they apply for public health care, Medicaid.
Well, to jump in, the growth of the Medicaid enrollees was, you know, it's been over the course of 3 years. So we've seen about a little over 1.5 million Floridians gain that Medicaid coverage since the start of the pandemic. So it's been a pretty measured growth. The disenrollment or the redeterminations is going to operate a little bit similarly in that it's going to take 12 months for the Department of Children and Families to re-examine
to bounce
these
people.
Correct. So they will not be all falling off on May 1st. There will be a monthly approach to reviewing everyone's eligibility. That being said, not having Medicaid in the state of Florida will put some people at a disadvantage, unfortunately. Locally in Tampa Bay, we're very fortunate that we have some safety net programs that are going to help a lot of those people, but most of the state of Florida does not have that same type of safety net programming.
Yeah, like, for example, Hillsborough County has its own program.
It does.
That is unique to Hillsborough residents.
It is, and it's an amazing program. It's a managed care plan that is funded by Hillsborough County to provide completely free healthcare, no-cost healthcare, I should say, to Hillsborough County residents.
It's income qualified, right?
Yeah, up to 175% of the federal poverty level, which for a single adult is about $2,100 per month they can earn and still qualify for Hillsborough County healthcare plan. Also in Polk County, there's a safety net program as well, and also in Pinellas.
Oh, okay, so that's good. But under the circumstances of what's happening May 1st, as dictated by the federal government, who's most likely to be affected by this requirement of reapplying and re-enrolling? Adults, children, the disabled, I mean, people who don't speak English? I mean, who's most likely to be negatively affected by this?
Yeah, I think you've covered a lot of that. I mean, we know that the communication can sometimes be overwhelming and confusing, which is one of the reasons why we're really trying to let people know to pay attention for an envelope with a yellow stripe, because that's eye-catching. And they need to respond to that. They need to know what's in that letter, if anything's being asked of them to continue their coverage and to evaluate their eligibility.
You know, respectfully, a lot of people don't use snail mail anymore, and they're not going to be opening their mailbox and looking for, you know, a piece of postal piece with a yellow stripe. In fact, so many people move around in Florida now because of the lack of affordable housing. You know, they're in temporary quarters like motels, or they're in their car. You know, people who qualify for Medicaid, some of them, you know, they're living in their car or a temporary shelter situation, or who knows where. How are they going to get that piece of mail with the yellow stripe?
So, I mean, your point is valid. You know, a lot of these folks have set up online accounts, but again, you're expecting and relying on the fact that they're going to log in. Now, they are getting multiple different forms of communication. They're getting emails and all kinds of direct electronic communication. So I know the state is trying to get the attention of their consumers from multiple different communications, but we're still going to see people who are going to struggle. They're not going to understand the communication.
Yeah.
They're not going to know what their next step is. They're not going to be able to get through on the call line. So they're going to need help. They're going to need help navigating this process. And I think the advantage is that we have assisters like Katie's team all over the state that speak multiple languages, that understand the processes, they understand the policies, so they can even look at the letter and probably figure out how to assist these folks. And, you know, it not only with the Medicaid redetermination process, but we've got to help those that are losing Medicaid navigate those other systems, such as the Hillsborough Health Plan, which Katie and her team do, or the Marketplace. And we have that team of navigators across the state that can help anyone in their nearest zip code. We also have people that can specialize speaking certain languages. They can address transportation issues. We know in rural areas, you know, Wi-Fi and broadband is sort of can be sketchy in terms of access. So all of these things try to be mitigated by the on the ground assistance staff. But I think the people that are going to be most vulnerable are going to be people who don't speak the language. When they get letters, they don't understand computer literacy. People are going to have surgeries that they've got lined up. People are going to be in the middle of treatment for cancer. You know, these are things that have to be taken very seriously.
And they show up for their treatment and are turned away because their health insurance is no longer valid? Is that what we can expect?
Well, they're not going to lose coverage right away. The state is not in disenrolling anyone till they've completed the review process. So that's the one positive thing that we know for sure. So unless somebody doesn't comply with the request, or they're just completely ineligible, during that time when they're figuring out, is this person really eligible? Have we verified this against other electronic verifications? They will retain that coverage during that time.
Okay, we don't know how long that time is.
We don't.
And, you know, it could be somebody gets their status changed in May 1st or the first week of May, and somebody else in the first week of August. And we don't know who is who and when that will happen.
Well, in the state plan, they've identified specific groups mm-hmm. for each month. For example, in the beginning, right in this time period, they're looking at people they've done what's called ex parte or utilizing what electronic data systems that are out there that they can back up against to verify things like income and citizenship and those kinds of things to the extent that it's available.
So that first group are going to be people that they hope to basically re-enroll automatically?
Well, that first group that's going to go through and get the letters are going to be people that from the department's point of view and what they verified are no longer eligible for coverage.
Oh, so the first group is going to be people who are going to be bounced off based on publicly verifiable data.
And if they haven't utilized medical services in over a year.
Okay.
That was another part of the criteria.
So what if they, went out of state and used services in another state? Does that mean that they're going to be bounced by Florida?
If they were using medical services in another state, they likely were another state's resident. And so they should be disenrolled from Medicaid. Mm-hmm. They were no longer a Florida resident.
Yeah, Florida's unique in that we have a lot of snowbirds, though, even among poor people. I mean, you know. You know, I read somewhere that Florida performs worse than some other states when it comes to this automatic review process, and that fewer than half of its automatic renewals are done automatically. I guess, you know, one of the fundamental questions I have, and I don't know which of you feels most comfortable asking this, but would any of this be mitigated and better had Florida expanded Medicaid like most of the other states? Who wants to take that? I realize, you know, that's a quasi-political question because that's how I think of these things. In terms of solutions, I don't think about one Hispanic-speaking navigator who could go out to, you know, Waimama and make a difference in one person's life, that's great for that person. But, you know, systemically, you know, can we have a better process? And would that process have been improved, be improved if we, Florida, had expanded Medicaid like, you know, 90%, 90+% of the rest of the country?
Well, objectively, the data shows that in states where they've expanded Medicaid, access to health care has greatly increased. And
yeah,
we know the impact.
Eureka, like, you know, who would have thunk?
So we know having health coverage, the other thing is the data shows having health coverage is a financial benefit to an individual, to the family, because these folks can then invest in the economy,
right?
Because they're not spending all their money on healthcare services. So having coverage has both an individual impact, family level impact, long term access to coverage and Medicare when a woman is pregnant, prenatal care, healthier baby going forward, better contributor to society. So all of those things could be better by
expanding Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. If you have questions about the great unwinding of Medicaid, you can call us at 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433. I'm here with my guests, Jody Ray and Katie Roters-Turner, who are healthcare advocates and who are working to ease the pain a little bit from this this change in federal benefits for Medicaid and the unrolling, disenrolling of a number of people who qualified during the pandemic and who may not be qualified now, right? So let me ask you about your particular organization's role in this process. And tell me, Katie, for example, what is your foundation? What is the role of it in working on this problem?
Oh, thank you. So the Family Healthcare Foundation is a nonprofit, and we've been in Tampa Bay for, this is our 25th year, actually. It's our 25th anniversary. And we have been operating on helping people find affordable healthcare coverage, ensuring they understand how to use it, and removing barriers that will help them get access to the medical services that they need. So we are the regional grantee under the statewide Covering Florida initiative that Jody and her team runs over at the College of Public Health. And we partner with BayCare Health System, Tampa General Hospital, Evra Health in Pinellas, and Premier Community Healthcare Group up in Pasco County. And in total, there's about 35 navigators across Tampa Bay that will help people find affordable healthcare coverage.
And how do the people find the navigators, or the navigators find the people?
That's a great question. So we've been working, especially recently, really strategically with as many stakeholders as possible, ensuring that they're aware of what's going to be happening over the next 12 months. We've put out a big media campaign. We have been engaging with the school district, other nonprofits and community partners to ensure that everybody's as prepared as possible, as we possibly can be. We know we can't do this work alone. And that we won't be able to get to everyone, but we're trying our hardest.
So, but again, though, how do people find a navigator, or how does a navigator find them? I mean, when you say there's a media campaign, to whom is it directed, and where is it? You know, like, how are you reaching people? Through what means?
Well, through, like, radio shows like today's.
Okay.
So, in-kind media. We are doing social media. We have done major webinars statewide with organizations like Unite Us. It's a social determinants of health referral platform to help connect people to services around the state. Tampa Bay Times did a huge article about this that we were featured in. We're really just kind of throwing anything at the wall and trying to make it stick.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because, for example, here we have a listener on WMNF who's following the show who has a question.
Wonderful.
You know, who says, I've been permanently disabled since 2018. Do I need to do anything? Have they sent the letters yet? And this is from Greg in Tampa. And we really appreciate you getting in touch with us, Greg, because we can find out the answer to your question.
So
what does he have to do? He's looking, you know, this is somebody who's reaching out now who didn't know apparently about this until listening.
So one of the things that's really important is that folks don't try to do this early, because we don't want to clog the system with folks who aren't up for redetermination yet in this process. And also, it could affect their ability to be redetermined.
So don't jump the gun.
Do not jump the gun. Pay close attention to your mail. Make sure that you've gone in and set up an account on the Department of Children and Families website under at the Access account, which is where they can manage their own Medicaid account. And so making
sure... What's the website for that, for Greg?
It's Access.
Yeah, if you Google DCF My Access, it'll show up.
DCF My Access .org.gov, one of those, huh?
It'll probably be .gov because it is the Florida state.
Okay, DCF My Access. Google that and create an account, an online account.
So usually, you do that a lot of times when you're applying. As part of the process, you create a login for that. I think the key is, and this is what Katie and our other Navigator teams have been pushing out for the last year, is making sure that contact information is up to date so that you do get the communication. Going back to your point, people can move, you know, right, and things like that. So that's what's really important. And pay attention to that letter that you'll be getting with the yellow stripe. But if you don't have either of those and your account information's up to date, and you can actually see the status of your Medicaid coverage if you go in to your Access account, don't do anything. We don't want you to do anything else right now.
Oh, okay.
And the listener's name is Greg?
Yeah.
Yeah, and just to Greg's question, you know, as Jody mentioned, if he is able to get into the My Access account, has his username and password written down, and I know I don't have all my passwords written down, you can go and see when your Medicaid is eligible through, and then the date that you may be needing to redetermine. If for some reason you aren't able to log into your My Access account, there is actually a virtual assistant on the front of the DCF Medicaid website. And you can use that virtual assistant, enter in some key pieces of information about yourself, mm-hmm, and you should be able to get your redetermination date there as well.
Okay. All right. And then just like follow the instructions. Don't do anything until you have to.
Yeah, don't panic apply. Yeah. You are going to be contacted.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go, Greg. Thanks for your question. I have Sarah from Palm Harbor on the line, too. Sarah, you're on the air. Do you have a question for my experts here?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. My one question is that she mentioned that there's specific programs like in the county if for some reason we get kicked off Medicaid.
Right.
How do you apply for the county program?
That is a great question. So if you're in Palm Harbor, likely Pinellas County Healthcare Plan is going to be a good fit. I would also always encourage people to look at the health insurance marketplace too. Connecting with the Navigator is great because we can do a quick screening and identify all the programs you might be eligible for and then help you apply for them. But the Pinellas County Healthcare Plan, it's available on the Pinellas County Health and Human Services website. Again, I hate to say it, but if you Google Pinellas County Healthcare Plan, it should pop up with the online application. And we'll share our contact information at the end of the show, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But we can help talk to you about that as well and connect you with one of the Pinellas County assister groups as well that will help with that application.
Okay. And then why is it that Florida won't expand Medicaid? Does it cost them money? Or I thought it was...
Because people elect Republicans. The Republican legislature makes the decision about whether or not to expand Medicaid. And we've been controlled by Republicans for the last 25 years. Well, you know, that's certainly an opinion that many people share. This is the same Republican legislature that rejected free money to put in high-speed rail here. This is a joint federal and state program. The federal money's there. Let's just be real about it. That's the reason. It's up to the legislature. And the legislature, the people that Floridians have been electing, just say no. Right? I mean, look, I don't want to put my guests on the spot here. I'll say it. I'll say it. It's one of, you know, really, I mean, it's one of the issues that they have, you know, refused to make progress on. And they're not alone, right? There's 10 other states like that. But there's 40 who have expanded Medicaid.
Yeah. So,
there you have it, Sarah. Thank you for calling in. Appreciate it. Thank you. All right. So there, we've already helped two people. How about that?
Wonderful. Great way to start the day.
Right. You can put some notches on your belt there with those two people. Okay. So let's talk about the process, too, for the people who are not listening to the show, who may not receive their notice, may not pay attention, maybe are living in their car or something like that. You know, where are those people supposed to actually get help?
Well, one of the things they can do is they can reach out to the statewide Covering Florida line. Or go on the Covering Florida website, which is www.coveringflorida.org, or the statewide line, which is 877-813-9115.
Yeah, and we'll be giving a lot of resources at the end of the show, and maybe put it up on our website after the show. When we talk about this show, we'll probably put a lot of contact information up for people.
And the nice thing is while our subgrantee, some of them have localized numbers, if calling the statewide number will still get to those local folks. So we usually, if you contact us by phone, we look at the zip code and we look at the nearest navigator in that zip code. And we will schedule them. Obviously, in the Tampa Bay area, most of those folks are under Katie's team. But we serve the whole state. We serve Key West to Pensacola. Mm-hmm. So anyone, anywhere can get that help by calling that number or going on the website. They can actually schedule and book with a navigator near them on their own as well.
Okay. Should they be doing that already or no?
They are doing that.
Oh, they are.
People are doing that. I mean, we've been getting a lot of phone calls, and mostly, you know, because it's early, a lot of them are just questions that are pretty basic, like, do I need to do something now? We are starting to see people who are coming in with letters that they don't understand. That's really helpful when you're speaking with an assister, especially if you have that communication, because we're able to look at that, try to see, you know, decipher what they're trying to communicate to the individual.
So the letters that people receive are more than simply we're kicking you off Medicaid. They're actually providing some information about what is the underlying reason that Medicaid believes they should no longer be eligible. Is that it? So, for example, it might say, we need you to provide current income, documents of your current income verification or something like that. And until you do, you know, if you don't within a certain time period, you're going to be disenrolled, something like that. Is that
something like that? Sometimes it'll say what the status of their eligibility is. What they need to do. Do they need it? Some of these folks are going to also have other benefits like, you know, food assistance. So then there's going to be more hoops for them if they're going through that process. That should not affect their Medicaid. Anyone who loses Medicaid because they didn't comply with those things around cash assistance and food assistance should contact a navigator because Medicaid should not be affected by that.
Hmm. Okay. Let's talk to Stephen in St. Pete. Stephen in St. Pete, you're on the line.
Yeah, I wanted to mention back in the early 2000s, I was flipping houses. And I got destroyed like a lot of other people, and it financially ruined me. And the health policy that I was able to barely afford, I wasn't able to keep because I was going through some real financial trouble. So anyway, the Free Clinic of St. Petersburg told me about the primary care program through Pinellas County Social Services. So I thought, huh, So basically, in a nutshell, I was ended up being able to be on that program for about 9 years to qualify. And basically, it was you could make up to $12,000 a year. But and you got on the program, you had to prove, you know, where you were making your money, if you were self-employed or whatever, come up with receipts and show them. And then you easily got on the program. And I cannot say how great it was. The greatest doctors, everything was covered. Dental, they don't do major work. They just clean and pull teeth. But on your medical, you could go to their doctors that they would send to you. They were great. I can't say enough how great it was, but it was called the primary health care program. And it's very easy to get online and to apply for it. And, you know, and like I said, you basically had to be around a $12,000 level.
When was the end of this for you, Stephen? What year was it?
When I turned 65, they kicked me off.
Oh, I see.
Because you'd
be Medicare now. Right.
Right.
Well, I see Katie nodding her head. Let me ask her about whether that program's still around and who might be eligible for it. Thank you for calling in and bringing it to our attention. Appreciate it.
Yeah, they have a new a building that they have off of Park Boulevard in Pinellas Park.
Okay.
You walk in there, you're like in Germany or Israel. They treat you like you're Tom Cruise or a movie star. No, I can't say enough great things about
Well, that's
right?
good to hear. You a satisfied customer.
You never see the bill. Never.
All right.
It's like you're in England.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for letting us know about it. And I'm sure those people really appreciate your praise. There's one satisfied customer. Katie, is that program still around?
So that's that Pinellas County healthcare plan that I mentioned earlier, safety net program that's offered through the Pinellas County Board of County Commissioners. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, in Hillsborough County has a phenomenal safety net program that's the income limits is even higher than that. It's 175% of the federal poverty level. And then as POC as well. So in Tampa Bay, we're really fortunate to have these remarkable programs that fill that Medicaid gap that many parts of the state are in, unfortunately.
So let's talk about that. You know, I don't think everyone realizes that there are people in a coverage gap, many, many, many people in a coverage gap who either don't make enough money to qualify for the Affordable Care Act marketplace insurance programs, because that has a certain income requirement in order to qualify. What was it, like $24,000 a year or something like that?
So in order to qualify for the advanced premium tax credits on the health insurance marketplace, a household income has to be at least 100% of the federal poverty level. So for a single individual, that's going to be about $13,000 a year.
Okay.
Approximately.
So you've got to be able to show
earned income
of at least $13,000 in order to apply for health insurance in the marketplace.
To qualify for the tax credits that would reduce the premium prices for whatever plan you choose, correct?
Right. Yeah, right. It doesn't help to just apply. You have to qualify for the credits that make it affordable. Right?
You can still enroll in coverage, but you'll be looking at full pay plans,
So the point is to get these credits. So let's be real about it. So, okay, if you don't qualify like that, though, then you need to make so little income that you qualify for Medicaid, right? And then in between, there's a bunch of people who can't qualify for either. That's what we're talking about, is the coverage gap?
Well, it's also coverage groups. It's not just an income situation. For example, single adults with no children are not really likely to get into the Medicaid program because they're not considered one of the primary eligibility groups. So it's not just around income, but also around who we cover. We cover senior citizens, we cover children, disabled, and pregnant women. And that's pretty much the gist of it for Florida. And then, you know, you're looking at the income level for those groups.
I see. All right. Well, that's and so when we're talking about these other programs, like the county programs, those are programs that are available to people in that gap. Is that it? Or as an alternative to Medicaid or something like that. Who are they available to?
So for people not eligible for Medicaid, so anyone not eligible for Medicaid who are below the income criteria for the respective county programs. So I mentioned Hillsborough County is very generous. It's up to 175% of the federal poverty level. So if there's an individual, they're not eligible for Medicaid. As Jody explained, not many people are as adults in the state of Florida. They could look at Hillsborough County as an option for them. And that's at no cost coverage for medical services and some dental services as well.
And the reason why there are so many adults who are not eligible for Medicaid coverage, even with appropriate income criteria, is because Florida hasn't expanded Medicaid enough to cover those people. I mean, that's it in a nutshell?
Correct. Mm.
Okay. So what if a person can't really prove their income status? Like, they work under the table, or they work mostly for cash tips, or their boss doesn't want to be investigated for not paying Social Security tax and workers' comp or something like that, and they don't want to ask their boss for income verification. What do those people do?
So I would say, you know, the self-employed are definitely the ones mm-hmm. that have the hardest time getting through that process for that reason. But both the Marketplace, Medicaid, and the Children's Health Insurance Program have documentation they'll accept, like a business log, that something that shows you're tracking your income coming in and going out. And then you're reporting your, especially as a self-employed, you're really only reporting on what is your net profit based on.
So if you're like a handyman who works for himself, who isn't incorporated and just, you know, mostly works for cash, for example, that person could keep their own self-created business log of how long does that have to go for? I mean, if they don't have it and they come and meet with a navigator and the navigator tells them, well, you have to keep a business log. And, you know, we need something to go on. I mean, how long is that kind of thing going to take?
It's usually about the last 30 days that the agencies are going to want to see proof of income verification. For the health insurance marketplace, if income is difficult to estimate, they can do a projection. I believe I'm going to be making this much this year based on best, you know, my history.
So it's not like submit 3 years of tax returns, like to get a mortgage or something.
Correct. So the federal government, for the health insurance marketplace, they will ask people to reconcile their taxes and their tax credit when they go to file. And if there is a tax credit being provided to help pay for health insurance, that individual or family will need to file taxes.
I see, where they haven't maybe filed before.
Correct, yeah. And that's part of the work of navigators. We explain that entire process to them to help them compare plans side by side so that they can look at all their options, identify if there's any medications that have higher costs, you know, what plan is going to best support them, explain things like what's a deductible, what's coinsurance. It's part of the work that we do every day.
Yeah, that's a lot of people need that, people who you know, have been out of the corporate economy, for example. You know, they need that kind of information. They're not, you know, paying their own self-employment taxes and things like that.
And I think a big difference is when you work for an employer that offers you health insurance, they're usually giving you 2 to 3 options to choose from. If someone goes to try to do this on their own, it can be so incredibly overwhelming. And we recognize that. And we want to help ease that burden as much as we possibly can.
This is another problem of not having universal health care or Medicaid or Medicare for all in this country, is that the process to even obtain benefits, health care benefits, is so overwhelmingly complicated, as you just pointed out. I mean, if we had Medicare for all, if we had universal health care, if we had European-style universal health care, then we wouldn't need these complications. We wouldn't need navigators to explain all the ins and outs and go through their tax liability and their tax benefits as well as their income verification in this very complicated process. And we would be covering everyone, and there wouldn't be people in a coverage gap.
Well, it gets even more complicated than that when they come in. They're thinking of it as it relates to their individual circumstances. So then they also have to find a provider that's going to maybe treat what they're you know,
that's
what their health care is.
Right.
Not it doesn't cover the scripts that they need. So we go further than even just dealing with the financial aspect of applying, but it's how do you identify the appropriate medical providers and how are you going to get and afford the services that you're going to need. So, you know, in a county like Hillsborough, I think we have almost 200 plans to choose from, which obviously, like Katie said, can be quite overwhelming. So in the marketplace, we have to figure out a way to help them narrow that down based on those kinds of things. So it's...
You're right. We did a show, back in October with the people from Florida Shine who have navigators helping people find the right plan for Medicare and whether and supplements and things like that. And that's a big part of what they do. You have to give them a list of all your medications and the specialist doctors that you may be required to see. And then are they in the network for that plan that you're looking at? And in Florida, I know that there's a lot of providers, a lot of healthcare providers that just won't take Medicaid patients, right? And they think they're getting reimbursed too low.
That and like in some of our rural areas, we have provider shortages. We have areas of the state where providers are only there seasonally. You know, so specialists, pediatric specialists, particularly under public coverage, can be a real challenge for families. Hmm. So there's some definite complications around just the healthcare piece.
Mm-hmm. And the navigators do help with that too then, huh?
Identifying providers?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it seems like if you're in this position, it would be really helpful to have your own navigator, your own like personal counselor, you know, to walk you through this process in every way. And so I guess it's most important to encourage people to find their navigator and get this information, right?
We believe so. I mean, we know that the navigators that have been doing this work, many for over 10 years, have really become these trusted experts to so many communities, households across, in our, you know, in Family Healthcare Foundation's case, across Tampa Bay. And so we want to help them throughout this process. And this is just one example of changes in healthcare policy that we are responding to. I mean, but there have been others across over the last decade, at least, that we, you know, have been able to successfully navigate ourselves. So we will continue to be here to help people through whatever issue comes up.
Well, that's good to know. I'm going to give my listeners some information about contacting various organizations and people for more information. So I'm going to suggest that you can make an appointment in person or virtually with a Covering Florida navigator on its website, which is coveringflorida.org, or by calling 877-813-9115. And Tampa Bay residents can get help from the Hispanic Services Councils navigators who speak Spanish, right? By calling 813-936-7700 or learn more about that on its website, which is HispanicServicesCouncil.org. Family Healthcare Foundation has navigators in Hillsborough, Pinellas, Pasco, and Polk counties, and residents can schedule an appointment in person or virtually on its website, which is familyhealthcarefdn.org, or you can call 813-995-7005. The Florida Department of Children and Families Office of Economic Self-Sufficiency, which is a mouthful, has a customer call center at 850-300-4323. And DCF, Department of Children and Families, has how-to instructional videos about this whole process on its Medicaid redetermination webpage at myflfamilies.com, myflfamilies.com. Is there anything else our listeners should know about this Medicaid unwinding that so many people are facing before we end? Because We're almost out of time. Katie?
Just something to share for Family Healthcare Foundation. Navigators speak English, Spanish, Creole, and Portuguese. So we're happy to help anybody. And then, of course, as part of the Covering Florida statewide initiative here locally in Tampa Bay, we all have access to a language line. So we are able to help anyone in any language.
Okay. Jody, anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I think the biggest thing is we really want to make sure that people have made their contact information current in their My Access account. We don't want folks to lose coverage simply because they didn't get the information. And to pay close attention to the letters that are coming in. Do read them and do call if you need help. Don't get stressed. Don't get overwhelmed, because Katie and I and those across the state, we have teams that can help and that do understand how to navigate this. So we don't want people to get lost along the way, and we don't want people to lose coverage that shouldn't.
All right. And even if you have moved and changed your address, you should fill out a U.S. Postal Service forwarding address form. That would help. And hopefully the yellow striped mailing will follow you to your new location, right?
Correct. You may also receive text messages or emails. They're doing a multifaceted platform approach to trying to reach people.
Okay. And they will be able to do that for you if you have registered on, say, that website again.
Well, it's myfloridafamilies.com, and then the My Access is the platform to check your account, update your contact information.
Okay. I think that's all pretty good advice. I do appreciate you both for being here today, and I wanted to thank Jody Ray from Florida Covering Kids and Families at USF and Katie Roters-Turner at the Family Healthcare Foundation for helping us understand this complicated and kind of unnerving situation, really, with Medicaid, the great unwinding, I've seen it called, the great unrolling. And for giving us a lot of information about how to get help if you or your family are facing this kind of situation. I want to thank also my WMNF volunteers, Jessica Green and Barbara Fling, who make this show work. And remember, all of our shows are archived for your listening pleasure on demand at wmnf.org/midpoint. Or as a WMNF Midpoint podcast, usually available the day after the show airs, wherever you get your podcasts. So if you joined us late, you can always go back and listen at your convenience. And you can show your support for Midpoint and for WMNF by dropping a donation in our tip jar and telling the powers that be here at WMNF that you are directing your donation to Midpoint. We'd be very grateful for that support. Now, please stay tuned for Duncan Strauss and Talking Animals. We are WMNF Tampa. So many horses.